Life, where it's time for what we call the quick take. Although I think actually you can't really have an extended quick take, but if you could, that's what we're doing here with Brian Graff. He is the chief executive officer at the American Retirement Association. If you want to learn more, usaretirement.org, on Twitter at USA_retirement. And where we're going for his quick take is the Secure Act, which goes into effect tomorrow on New Year's Day, but it's signed just recently. President Trump signed the Secure Act a week ago as part of the government spending bill. And love it or hate it, and you don't probably know enough to get an opinion on that yet, well, it's going to affect you, or most likely it's going to affect you, because somewhere in here, there is something that touches almost every retirement saver. The Secure Act, the Secure legislation, setting every community up for retirement enhancement. That's what Secure is. It is an acronym, and it has a whole bunch of provisions intended to strengthen retirement security across the country. We'll see whether or not it does that when we talk with Brian. Brian Graff, welcome to Money Life.
Thank you, Chuck. Appreciate being here.
So let's start with your take on the Secure Act, because when I talk with experts about it, or when I've read things that have been sent out, of course, it occurred over the holidays, so maybe there was a little less reaction. There has been a mixed bag. I mean, there are some folks who think, yeah, this really does some good things. And there are others who are like, well, you know, the nice part is it's bipartisan, but it's not doing much because you can't move the ball much. You can't move the ball much if you're doing it on a bipartisan way, I guess, at this point. So where are overall?
That's very astute analysis from your listeners, Chuck. I mean, the reality is, you know, in order to pass the House of Representatives by 417-3, which is this legislation actually did this past May, which, trust me, as I'm sure you're aware, not much passed Congress at all, certainly not much on such a almost unanimous way. You know, you're not going to be doing things that are going to be rocking the boat dramatically, because you wouldn't be able to make everybody happy that way. So this does mostly some good things. There's nothing that there's one thing I think that is somewhat controversial that I'll talk about that some of your listeners might not be too thrilled about. But for the most part, the theme here is to try to make it easier for working Americans to save for retirement.
Let's set this up first with the most important thing. Nothing that is going into legislation enacted tomorrow affects anybody for this year. It is not like, hey, you hear this interview and you run out and do things. So, for example, one of the areas that is affected is inherited IRAs and required minimum distributions around inherited IRAs. It is not, hey, if you've got one of those, change what you're doing for this year, because nothing changes for you. It's only people that are affected going forward. That's important, but that's correct, right? I'm not misstating that.
Well, I mean, other than dying before
the end of the day today, yeah.
Dying before January 1st, there's not much that you can do ahead of time to technically prepare for this. And that's because Congress knew that they didn't want people to be able to plan as a result of any law changes, particularly tax law changes. They've gotten pretty practiced at this. So basically, yes, the only thing you could do would be to pass away before the first of the year. Otherwise, you're right, there's nothing really much you can do.
That out of the way, why don't we start with the area that you felt is controversial?
Sure, and that has to do with something called the stretch IRA, which is something that I think you were alluding to.
Yeah.
So that provision is certainly a favorite of a lot of financial advisors. And if you've got families with a substantial amount of wealth, it was certainly a wonderful estate planning technique that allowed you to take money that was in IRA accounts, bequeath it to grandchildren who were, you know, let's say in their very young ages, maybe even toddlers, and basically, you were extending the deferral period for taxation to the life expectancy of the child, which today could be into the 90s and pretty soon into the hundreds of years. Pretty nice tax deferral to be gained. under the provision, beginning with beneficiaries that receive bequested IRA gifts after the first of the year 2020, you're not going to be able to stretch that IRA as long as you were before. Namely, you can't do it over the entire life expectancy. As a general matter, what you're able to do is to have a period of deferral for up to 10 years. Now, that 10 years has a lot of exceptions and special rules, which I can, you know, generally summarize. First of all, most importantly, you can always and continue to give amounts, unlimited amounts, to your spouse like you can under estate tax principles. So that also applies here. There is no restrictions or time periods of deferral when you're giving amounts in IRA accounts to your spouse. Same would apply to disabled children or disabled relatives. Anyone who's disabled, you'd have the same ability to have a longer deferral period. You're not going to be limited to that 10 years. And the other kind of exception is that if you do end up giving bequested accounts to a grandchild, let's say, the taxation doesn't start occurring until that child reaches the age of majority. So you have, hypothetically, up until that child reaches age 18 plus an additional 10 years. So that is another, you know, benefit, if you will, of deferral to younger children, but certainly nothing close to what you were able to achieve under the previous stretch.
Yeah, because what this means is someone like me who inherited a small IRA from my mother, that's not even a true stretch IRA because it's just one generation. Where it's right. controversial is that I'm a 57-year-old man. My mom died 2 years ago. I am grandfathered because I'm obviously still living and what have you, and this happened before the law change. But if it were to happen to me now at 57, I'd have 10 years to get the money I inherit out of the IRA. Now, I inherited both a small Roth and a small traditional from my mother. The small Roth, well, that's not a problem because a Roth IRA is tax-free forever. So who cares when it comes out? It's not going to affect your taxes. But if you think about somebody who's 57 to 65, 68, whatever, they're chugging away trying to make maximum money before they get to retirement. Well, if I have to take that money out now and have it wind up being taxed, I could actually wind up putting myself into a higher tax bracket right at a time where I don't want it. That's where the controversy is, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what Congress has decided is that isn't your retirement money. It's the person who died's retirement money. And therefore, you can't think of it in terms of your retirement money, which is the way you were referring to it before. It's a gift. You're getting it. They want it out of that tax-preferred account sooner rather than later. And that's why it raised a lot of money to pay for the rest of the legislation. This really is all derived from Romney. I don't know if you remember, during the presidential campaign, he had this enormous IRA that resulted from the creation of a business that he was involved with, a startup, when he was working at Bain. He was smart enough to put the fairly worthless stock into a Roth IRA, and it grew to, you know, something in the order of almost $1 billion, one of the biggest IRAs out there. And, you know, that ruffled a lot of feathers, if you recall. And Congress kind of goes through its process of analyzing things. And even though this really doesn't address, you know, what he did, they ended up finding this, what they considered a loophole, namely the stretch IRA, and they decided that they wanted to go after it.
Yeah. Joyful. There are other things in the Secure Act as well. For example, annuities and 401k plans. Not everybody loves this idea, although I think it certainly opens options for folks. Explain how that's going to work.
Well, there's two elements to this that are somewhat interesting. One is something referred to as an in-plan annuity, Chuck, and that is a particular type of investment option that may start being offered more commonly in 401k plans, where instead of, you know, being in a typical mutual fund, large cap, small cap, target date, balanced, whatever, you would take a share of your contributions and invested in a deferred annuity with a, presumably some type of guaranteed rate of return. And then it would offer an annuity option at retirement. So that's one variation of what Congress did. And then the second is they also made it a lot easier for plan sponsors to offer at retirement an immediate annuity as a distribution option, not, which is more typical, by rolling it over to an IRA today and buying it on your own, but rather on a group basis, buying it out of the plan. Again, this is not very, this is not really utilized in the marketplace today. The point of these two provisions in the bill is to make it more viable for employers, 401k providers, to offer this to participants going forward.
In terms of other things that have happened here, there's good news for everyone in that the required minimum distribution age is going up, right?
Well, it's good news if you are below a certain age.
Right.
So it's kind of a cliff base, or for those of us of a certain age, I think you and me remember the Notch babies. It's very somewhat similar to that. Basically, if you were born prior to July 1st of 1949, you are stuck under the old rules. If you were born July 1st, 1949 or later, then you get the benefit of these new rules. And these rules will be running side by side. They're not people that that turn 70 and a half during 2019 are still going to be subject to the prior rules. They still have to take their first distribution by April 1 of 2020. But if you were fortunate enough to have made the cut, so to speak, and are born July 1, 49 or later, then you're going to get the opportunity to defer till April 1 of the year following the year that you attain age 72.
Yeah, so that's, for a lot of people, that's going to wind up being a benefit. And for those for whom it's not, well, you're just stuck with the system you're stuck with now. So we will wind up seeing how that one works. And then I guess the last big piece.
I think a lot of people are going to be upset. First of all, this happened, as you pointed out, the president signed the bill at 11 o'clock p.m. on December 20th. You know, it's not like a lot of people were paying attention to this legislation, and probably a lot of people aren't really paying attention until they start listening to programs like yours after the holidays. And, I think what's going to happen is I think a lot of people are going to be, frustrated. Hey, I thought I was going to be able to wait now until 72, and I'm not going to be able to just because I was born, a few days before the deadline.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right. There will be some folks who maybe are caught by surprise. But the other thing that's here as well is that a big part of the SECURE Act is trying to make it that we do that much more to encourage auto enrollment, to make it that employers put their workers into retirement plans, to make sure that there are more plans for people and that more people are participating. I mean, it's not necessarily massive incentives, but it should help, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's probably the thematically the cornerstone, the bill, the big thing that the members of Congress would, do their floor speeches on, is trying to get more people covered by workplace plans. Because what we find data-wise is it's pretty compelling. People that are in a workplace savings program where they have something available to save out of their paycheck at work are 12 times more likely to save for retirement than people who are doing it on their own. I mean, it's pretty dramatic differences in data points. And that's, by the way, for moderate income workers, not for higher income workers. For moderate income workers, they're literally 12 times more likely to save when they have a 401k type of program at the workplace. And so we need to get more people covered by these plans. And, still, frankly, for the last 30, 40 years, kind of been stuck at about 60, 65% of the full-time workforce having access to a plan. So there's a bunch of changes that are intended to make it a lot easier for particularly small businesses where they're more typically less likely to have a plan to offer one. There's, you know, huge increases in tax credits for employers to pay for the cost of adopting a plan. As you pointed out, there's huge incentives for existing employers and new employers to do something called automatic enrollment, where when someone gets hired, they're automatically put into the plan at a, you know, let's say a 3% deferral rate. And the employee can opt out. They're not forced to do it. But what we find is that it dramatically increases the likelihood that they'll stay in the plan and actually save when they're automatically enrolled. There's an interesting provision about part-time workers. A lot of women, as you are probably aware, tend to work on a part-time basis. And, you know, because they don't work enough hours in any particular year, they end up not being able to participate in the plan because a lot of plans require an employee to work at least 1,000 hours to be able to participate in the 401k. So this dramatically lowers that threshold to make it more likely that pretty much anyone who works on a long-term part-time basis will now have to become eligible to participate in the 401k.
It's a really interesting act. Like I said, it's going to affect almost everyone. It's the Secure Act of 2019. Find out how it affects you. If you want to learn more, check out the website of the American Retirement Association. It's usaretirement.org. Brian Graff is Chief Executive Officer at the American Retirement Association. Brian, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Chuck. Have a great day.
It's at USA_retirement on Twitter. Money Life will be right back. Stay with us.